honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, working our way to the culmination of a pilgrimage that ultimately began in a foxhole on Okinawa when a young American in the 96th Infantry Division survived a hand-to-hand struggle with an enemy soldier. That soldier's wallet held clues to his identity. We've been talking to World War II veteran Durrell Gibbs and his son Wes about the incredible journey the photos in that wallet took them on. If you'd like to order the book Wes has written about it, you can find instructions at hometownheroesradio.com. You know who the soldier was. You know his daughter, who was two when he was killed, is still living. Don't know if she wants to meet with you or talk to you, but all these things fall into place, and you've got a plan to go to Japan, and you're even taking your siblings along too, not just your dad.
Yeah, I told my brother and sister, there's three of us in our family, I said, you weren't able to go to Okinawa, but you can't miss this. And they said the same thing. We've got to be a part of this. We're going to meet Hojo's daughter. You know, and we'd been told, we didn't quite know what to expect totally. The Japanese interpreter had told us, you know, Japanese protocol, don't touch her. You know, she's going to be standoffish. You just didn't quite know what to expect. And we landed in Japan, and NHK was there to meet us and get us in our hotels. And Dad, I don't think he got any sleep. You know, that night, the next morning, we were going to take the bullet train and meet Hojo's daughter, and he was so concerned about what the reception might be. We just still didn't quite know. You know, nobody said, she's excited to meet you. She's agreed to, and that's about all we knew. And so the next morning, a quick bullet train ride from Tokyo to Morioka took place. And I want to mention, Dad's an old cowboy, and so he wears a Stetson hat. And he had his white Stetson on, and so the media was aware we were coming. And even in Okinawa, people on the street would honk and say, cowboy, and everybody knew his Stetson hat. Well, we got to Tokyo, and, you know, we were the only guys walking down the street with a guy with a big white Stetson. And so everybody knew him and knew what our mission was. And we arrived in Morioka. They wired Dad up for sound. NHK was going to film this meeting. And we were informed that Hojo's daughter, her name was Noriko Kikuchi, you know, that she'd had a rough life, but she was kind of retired now and lived in a small home. And as we unloaded the van and walked up this path to her home, everything was nice and neat and clean. She had made a sign and pasted it to the door of her home that said, welcome, Mr. Gibbs. And instead of not wanting him to touch her, she kind of rushed to Dad and took a hold of his arm. Just held on to his arm. We were following kind of behind them in a little entourage of media. So we all entered her home, which was maybe half the size of this room we're sitting in right here, but very neat and clean. She had some fresh fruit there for us and a low table. We all knelt around that little table. So we had an interpreter. She couldn't speak English, and of course we couldn't speak Japanese. She was just very exuberant. And then as we knelt down, it seemed like she was a little bit subdued. And Dad presented her this wallet and the contents, and she took it out. And the interpreter, Dad relayed some of the information about the circumstances that he had obtained it. She asked him if her father was alive when he first saw him, and Dad said yes, and she said, was he dead when you last saw him? And Dad said yes. And then she asked, I thought, a pretty important question. She said, were you both fighting for your lives? And of course, the answer to that is yes, you know. And she seemed content to me. Did you get that idea, Dad? She seemed content to know that that any one of them could have lost their lives. She seemed content in the knowledge that it was kind of every man for himself, I guess, at that point. She seemed content in that. The discussion got around to each man was fighting to stay alive. That was the words. Each man fought to stay alive.
And I know there's something else that she said that held deep meaning, but I want to ask you, Durrell, when you're walking up, what's going through your mind? Before you see that sign, before she comes and grabs your arm, what were you thinking?
Well, the day before, I started thinking how serious we was going to meet the Japanese soldier's daughter. She was 2 years old when he died, and all she ever knew about her dad was what she got from her mother. You know, she don't remember at 2 years. And here, the soldier that was partially responsible for her dad's death, I say partially because there were two of us in that foxhole. Here she's going to meet the guy that's going to give her dad's wallet, was the guy that had a hand in her dad's death. For me, it was, I wondered what I should say. Like Wes said, you don't want to show any emotion. That's what Alex said too. He said, don't show any emotion or anything like that. Well, how do you go through something like that and not show emotion?
So when you saw that sign in English saying, welcome, Mr. Gibbs, and then she walks out and reaches toward you and grabs your arm, can you help us understand what that felt like?
Well, it relieved me because I was free to show what any emotion. She was showing all kinds of emotion, and I did too. Wes did too. All of us, it was an emotional situation.
And to be able to take this wallet that you've had for 66 years and hand it to her, what was that like?
Well, by then, after quite a few hours a night and part of a day, being stressed on how I wanted to do things right, but how was you going to do what we had to do and not show emotion? See, all of a sudden, all that was released because she showed the emotion, and then we was relieved. We knew, well, we was going to show emotion anyway. I mean, how do you don't do things like that and not show any emotion?
And the envelope that you'd never been allowed to open was opened.
Actually, Dad had opened it a little before then to kind of see what was in it, to satisfy his curiosity, and he'd always told us he felt that it was probably a sweetheart's hair. You know, that's what a U.S. soldier would do.
Yeah, sure.
And didn't quite realize what those short hair clippings were until the research group then filled us in. But Dad was very careful with it. And
I opened it, and the minute I seen that short hair, I just closed it up. The whole thing was, when she opened it, there was a fingernail there in the bottom. I didn't know that fingernail was there.
She laid out a piece of tissue paper, I think, on this table in front of us, and she carefully poured out the hair and the fingernail and touched them, and, you know, it was just very, very emotional, thoughtful. She carefully put those back in the envelope, and, you know, and their beliefs, I think I explained that before. She said to Dad then, I can't remember right if it was right then or just a little while later, a few minutes later, she said to Dad, you've brought my father home. So from the house, we actually went out, and there, a short distance away was a temple, a Buddhist temple, I think is what it was.
She wanted me to go with her to that worship place so that for her dad's spirit to be there at that shrine, they had to have something that he had, and this wallet and that fingernail and all that stuff. She wanted me to go there and be with her when she put that back there. That was the hardest part of my being, because those two guides, the two Marines, they said, be careful of what you say, because they might use that so that the cause of the war isn't just all Japan's fault. Be careful what you say. Well, how many soldiers lost their lives in the death march? See, that was in my head. How many families that lost loved ones, they hate the Japanese. See? So here, American soldier, after this experience, is there with this Japanese lady, so her father's spirit can be there at the place of reverence. That was awfully hard for me to go there, because I felt like I was on the wrong side of the fence.
And Wes, I got the sense that even though you all knew it would be meaningful for the family, the depth of that meaning for her was more evident because of that ceremony?
Yes, it was a great closure, you know, for her. She'd never, I don't think, really had given her dad a thought with her rough life. It sounded like there were other family relatives of his and hers that she'd never met that were there for this meeting. And so it seemed really, we could see them visiting together. It was the first time she'd ever met them. She had not been a part of that family, really. And so they were there. And I know Dad was worried about that, knew that, and we discussed that. You know, and it wasn't a political or a military reason we were there, but to help that family find some closure, too, the same way we had. So I think it was a great, great blessing for both families, regardless of, you know, he was Japanese, Dad was U.S. That's the way that was.
And, Durrell, what was the biggest takeaway for you from this whole saga?
Well, before, when I talked about they were Japs, and all of a sudden, I can't do that anymore. They're Japanese. We found out they have the same problems we have. They have three meals a day, hopefully. They have a life of their own. They're Japanese. Suddenly, it don't seem right when I say the word Japs, and that's just the way it is. And that's how people can change. Hate can do a lot of damage, and something has to happen to heal it. So now they're Japanese.
And for you, Wes, you never knew where this was going to go. You didn't know all the twists and turns it was going to take on the way to that culmination you just shared with us. But what have you learned from this whole process?
No, you're right. When we went to Okinawa, we had just no idea of what was in front of us. But I think I learned and I see now more clearly, you know, that when you're on a mission for good, and that's the way this was, you know, it was purely Well, aside from the battlefield visits and the historical part of it, that's something I'll always remember and treasure. And I took hundreds of photographs, and, you know, that's a record for our family. But on the human side of it, that's much more important, I think, for both of our families. And I feel very firmly that just because of the value of that mission to both families, the doors were opened, you know, by the Lord, by whoever you think the higher power is. We were helped to find our way in a way that it just became clear each day. And now looking back, I see that so much good, you know, was done for her family, for her. How I've thought often now, you know, how life must be for her. I have a marvelous picture of my sister and her together. And I thought that was really, really a touching picture, because here's two daughters of these two soldiers, you know, at the soldiers that met on the battlefield, and here's the two daughters side by side. I just think it's been a tremendous amount of closure for both families, you know, a meaningful way to move on and find peace. And so I think we were helped to accomplish that, and that people who want to accomplish something like that will be helped along, whatever the situation and circumstances might be.
Well said. And why did you feel it was important to put this book together?
I'm very strong a proponent of recording. Just what you're doing is marvelous, and I do the same thing. Our veterans are these people with stories, men and women, of World War II. Sometime in my lifetime, and it's not very far away, there will be a newspaper story that says the last living World War II veteran passed away today. And I think there's so much to record, you know, for people to learn about later, particularly families of those individuals. So what you're doing is great. I wanted to put together something for our family and other people who would have an interest in it, and to be able to see how, you know, a soldier's journey started clear back when he was a boy and led along these paths that, you know, weren't planned. But the way was open to do something marvelous for somebody else and to help somebody else along their way. And I wanted that this book, which isn't a real lengthy book, but a record of that. So I have a lot of photographs in there, and I decided to write it from my point of view. I didn't know how else to write it. I kept a journal throughout our trip. And, you know, along the way, I would send emails home with the day's events and a whole bunch of pictures from the day. I'd stay up until midnight that night, kind of putting this together. It started out with family members, and before I knew it, it was being forwarded to hundreds of people.
Well, let me ask you, Durrell, what does it mean to you that your son would do all this, would go to all this trouble? Because it wouldn't have happened without his initiative.
Well, no, he had to do all, he kept all the records. He had to put that book together. If it hadn't have been for Wes and his talents, it takes talent to do that. If it hadn't have been for Wes, that story would have died with me.
You know, Durrell, there's two questions I try to ask at the end of any one of these interviews. First, there's something I have to say. I can't forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for letting us into this story, this journey, this adventure you've been on that is blowing a lot of people's minds right now, I'm sure. But when you think back on 97 years on this planet, is there something that you would say you're most proud of or most thankful for?
Well, it's brought a sense of an awareness of what the Lord can do in our lives. Regardless of what we be, the beliefs we have, the Lord is with us, and it's up to us to the extent that knowing that can help or deter us. It's up to us. They talked about me being 97. That isn't half of it. You know, we've got goals. I've got a goal. I want to be the oldest World War II vet alive. It looks like maybe I'll have to stick around another 10 years. But I aim to do that.
The journey is always worth it, and you never know how it may end up. Thanks for listening to Hometown Heroes today. There are a few more comments from father and son that wouldn't quite fit into our radio time, but are featured in the podcast version online. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you can join us again next time when we'll be reminded again through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.